Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests. And this evening we have with us Bill Sardi, who's a health journalist. He supports Radio Liberty and certainly one of my favorite guests. And we're going to be talking about vitamin C. Now, when you talk about vitamin C, people sort of shrug their shoulders as if, well, that's old hat. I mean, what about vitamin C? Before the evening's over, you're going to get a whole different impression of this amazing vitamin that the human being does not manufacture in his body. Most other animals do. I think fruit bats and perhaps hamsters or guinea pigs don't. But all the other animals manufacture this in their bodies. And, Bill, why don't you go ahead and pick up the story?
Well, certainly we have an ongoing story with vitamin C that keeps unfolding, and, of course, there's new breaking stories with it, so much so that in about a week or so, we're going to unveil Vitamin C Week at my website at knowledgeofhealth.com. And we have eight new reports of information heard nowhere else, brand new, and of course it's astounded us what we can continue to uncover about vitamin C. Not only the medical aspects, but the intrigue of covering up this wonderful vitamin and all of its wonderful properties, and trying to either frighten the public away from this vitamin or to confuse the public or obscure research or just basically to ignore it. And of course, as we look at this, this vitamin, it was actually discovered by a man, Georgi was his name, a PhD, and I believe he was Polish at the time, working in laboratories, though, here in the United States. And of course, his quotation was, he always had the feeling that there wasn't enough use made of vitamin C for supporting human health. And of course, he lived up until almost 1980 here and was still saying the same thing. So. And it continued on from there, and of course, now vitamin C is being relegated to the minor role of preventing scurvy. That's it, when it could prevent cataracts, heart and blood vessel disease, cancer, and so on. The two major leading causes of mortality, of course, are in there. And so, how this unfolded, how they were able to do this, we've now been able to track down the footprints and disclose this to the public so they could understand when this got put out that vitamin C is nothing but expensive urine. This was a fraudulent claim made by Mark Levine, an MD researcher at the National Institutes of Health, and he holds the enviable position and distinction of being the sole researcher that misdirected the entire modern world in regards to vitamin C. And, of course, embarrassingly, the Linus Pauling Institute researchers went along with this. They didn't oppose this at the time. And, in fact, the director there, Balls Frey, who's a PhD, said the message is that large doses of vitamin C simply go to waste. And, of course, I only wish Linus Pauling was around to hear that with the name of his institute on it.
Well, you know, the thing is that they have proven that if you have high doses of vitamin C, it really has beneficial effects, doesn't it?
Well, it certainly does. We're going to go into some of those effects, and we're going to tell your audience tonight how they knew that vitamin C lowers cholesterol, many years before they invented the first cholesterol-lowering drug.
But of course, if vitamin C would lower cholesterol, then you wouldn't need the statin drugs that made something like $26 billion for the drug companies last year. We're going to be back here in just a moment or two with our special guest this evening, Bill Sardi. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Bill Sardi. Bill, go ahead, pick up the story there. You were just saying that they had found many years ago, long before the statin drugs were popularized here, that vitamin C actually lowered cholesterol.
Well, we've talked about vitamin C as something that strengthens the arteries and then, of course, keeps the blood clots from occurring that really, in the end, cause all the heart attacks. But in our research, we kept digging harder, digging back into the literature in the archives of the National Library of Medicine, and we came up with a name, Emil Ginter, Dr. Emil Ginter from Slovakia, and he's a contemporary of Dr. Linus Pauling. Actually wrote the most modern published papers, as far as quantity of papers, 117 published papers on vitamin C from the 1950s all the way to the current day. He's still alive in Slovakia. In fact, we were able to contact him there, even get an emissary that we know in Bratislava to go there and get a picture. We'll have it online, and this humble man who now lives in near poverty discovered in the 1950s to the 1980s that vitamin C was actually a statin drug. It actually lowered cholesterol because it increased the production of bile, and bile then picks up and grabs cholesterol and takes it out of the system and at the same time raises good HDL cholesterol. It also lowers your triglycerides. Now, Dr. Ginter discovered all this and said that you needed to keep good blood levels. He called it the steady state levels. His quote in a later published paper, in every form of high cholesterol, an adequate vitamin C supply should be ensured in doses capable of creating maximal steady state levels of vitamin C in human tissues. Now this was known. What he was saying was you could reach high levels of vitamin C enough to lower cholesterol, and it was all known. If you recall, Mevacor was the first cholesterol-lowering drug, which came about in 1987, and even then, those cholesterol-lowering drugs were so weak, they couldn't prove that they lowered mortality. People were taking the pills with no benefit of living longer and simply running the risk of liver damage.
And, of course, what people don't understand is that the statin drugs work by poisoning the liver.
Well, and then, in order to prove that they could lower the mortality rates, they increased the dose of the statin drugs, which then was a trade-off for greater liver toxicity, and that's what we're facing today. These drugs, there's no way they would stay on the market today except for a corrupt Food and Drug Administration.
You hold that thought there for just a moment, Bill, as we bring our other stations right back on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Bill Sardi. And Bill was saying that it was known, you know, many, many years ago that long before the statin drugs came out back in the 1980s, that vitamin C in significant doses would lower the cholesterol. It was also good for so many other things. But, you know, they didn't want that sort of a solution. They wanted a product that they could market, you know, and as I said, the statin drugs pulled in something like $26 billion last year. That's a lot of money, but of course, if you didn't have the market out there, if you couldn't convince people they had to get their cholesterol down, if they could do it with a simple, very inexpensive thing like vitamin C, would you be selling these drugs that work? They work, actually, by lowering the cholesterol, and they lower the cholesterol by poisoning the liver. So much of our cholesterol is actually manufactured in the liver. The body wants to keep it at a fairly stable level. And then, of course, we come along and we poison the liver. And then we can cut off the liver's actually production of cholesterol. So pick up the story there, Bill.
I think the public is somewhat caught in between scientific arguments. Sometimes they don't know which side of the tennis court they belong on. And they're just seeing the battle go back and forth. But I think what outrages the public is when we tell them that there was a very overt effort made to completely shun, forget, and overlook this work by Dr. Emil Ginter, the world's most published authority on vitamin C, and certainly the living authority. 117 published papers in everything from the annals of the New York Academy of Sciences on up, highly distinguished publications. And, of course, all of this was done and ignored, even when Linus Pauling Institute researchers and others wrote subsequent papers. They never really referred to Ginter's work. And so it was easy to cover up the past, ignore it. The public doesn't have access to directly or not familiar with how to read scientific arguments at the National Library of Medicine. And so it's something that's easily, covered up, as you might say.
And, of course, when Linus Pauling came out and talked about the advantages of vitamin C, he was demonized and marginalized and pointing out that, you know, he wasn't a biochemist, his Nobel Prize was in something else. And I can remember within organized medicine how everybody ridiculed Linus Pauling for suggesting that vitamin C was really very important for our health.
Well, the story goes on because he's not the only researcher that was overlooked, and we go to the work of Dr. Frederick Klenner of Reidsville, North Carolina. Now, Dr. Klenner, in the 1950s to 70s, did landmark work. He was highly regarded, well-trained at Duke University. Eventually had a practice in a rural area, Reidsville, North Carolina, and did extensive research with vitamin C. And, of course, his day, in the greatest day that Dr. Frederick Klenner had was before the body of the American Medical Association in 1949, when it was in the middle of the throes, our whole country was in a giant outburst and of poliomyelitis, polio. And so the country was grappling with what to do. They didn't have a vaccine yet, and of course, Dr. Fred Klenner had a moment in time in which he could get up and talk about this before the delegates of the AMA. And, of course, in 1991, a gentleman named Robert Landwehr wrote in the Journal of Orthomolecular Medicine about the origin of the 42-year stonewall of vitamin C, and he talks about those moments when Dr. Klenner was there, and he said, in the past 7 years, virus infections have treated and cured in a period of 72 hours by the employment of massive, frequent injections of ascorbic acid. I believe if vitamin C is given in massive doses to patients with poliomyelitis, none will be paralyzed, and there will be no further maiming or epidemics of polio. Now, that statement was made, and then...
This was 1949.
Exactly, and then... From the audience, nothing but quiet. No questions. No questions of Dr. Klenner when he stood before with all the rest of the speakers in the question and answer period. It was shunned. It was ignored. And why? Because Dr. Frederick Klenner had previously been talking about in medical journals of his successful treatment with vitamin C of pneumonia, burns, complications of pregnancy, insect bites, wound healing, diabetes, cancer, cholesterol, lockjaw, hepatitis, sunburn, the flu, herpes, even exposed his own children to childhood measles and then gave them vitamin C to show how fast they were cured of it. Fred Klenner was talking about changing the course of modern medicine, and instead of a myriad of drugs, he would center the entire practice of medicine around one single missing vitamin, vitamin C, the very vitamin that humans used to make, that animals, most of them, still make. We are genetically flawed. Dr. Klenner found this out. He, of course, was going to change the whole course of modern medicine. The doctors in the AMA drew silence. There was no applause. And Dr. Klenner went back to his practice in Reidsville, North Carolina. It's so difficult to see that these discoveries were, of course, overlooked, not even considered, most of them not referenced in modern papers today. This is not a marginal doctor. This was a Duke University-trained doctor who knew what he was talking about. He was risking the lives of people to treat them with vitamin C and finding it was successful. Thereafter, and in the years following, there was a concentrated effort to send out misinformation about vitamin C. And here's the long list of accusations: that vitamin C destroys vitamin B12, that it causes kidney stones, that it will cause gout, that it causes DNA damage, that it exacerbates gastric ulcers, that it causes internal blood clotting, causes diabetes, causes rashes, interferes with the metabolism of other nutrients, causes iron overload, causes cancer, causes atherosclerosis, is not an antioxidant, but is actually an oxidant, a rusting agent. And the list went on, and all the ones that I just told you are absolutely false. There is no shred of evidence to any of these false claims against vitamin C, and they go on and on and on. And of course, the public caught in the middle. It's worthless against the common cold. It's worthless against cancer. That's all they keep hearing. And of course, the public doesn't know how to sort out the scientific evidence. And of course, with a confused public, sometimes frightened that they might be taking doses that are too high. And of course, they're paralyzed. They don't know what to do. They don't know who to believe. And of course, this is what's befallen humanity. We had our chance to have a tremendous advancement in health. Even just the publication of Dr. Linus Pauling's book about the common cold and vitamin C brought about a 300% increase in the consumption of vitamin C at the time and a tremendous drop in cardiovascular mortality. And of course, the National Institutes of Health takes credit for this, but said it was their efforts with cholesterol-lowering drugs, but those didn't occur till 1987. They didn't even work then. They were the early versions of the drugs. And all this had happened a few years earlier with the publication of Dr. Linus Pauling's book. So, you see, all of this has been hidden by people that are in the know at high levels. And they've kept the public from hearing this. They've known for a long time, a long, long time, that, and of course the point is to cite the references, to dot the I's, cross the T's, and help the public see all this. We even have an exclusive interview from Dr. Ginter from Slovakia. The names of some of these countries has changed. They now have the Czech Republic, and Slovakia is a different area rather than Czechoslovakia, so that's the way it is in our modern era. But he was talking about taking vitamin C 500 milligrams at a time. He concedes and says, yes, they did know that they could get blood levels of vitamin C up much higher than was later indicated by the National Institutes of Health. This was all documented in the literature, and of course, our National Institutes of Health had access to it, but of course, they never cited it. They completely ignored it. And as if there was some snobbery to modern research that had overshadowed the former research, which was only 5 years preceding all the research done in the modern era here. So what was the difference? Nothing. And this was all done with good equipment and technology and so on. They were able to find all these things. So you can't just erase this science that was done. And Dr. Ginter, humbly, and a man living in, forgotten and a rather poor man now, but he is still able to communicate. We were able to get an interview with him exclusively to show us that actually all this had been known at the time. Dr. Ginter, highly regarded, published in many, many medical journals, so it's not a matter of his credentials. And, of course, as we go on, so many false claims about vitamin C. One of the common ones, well, you'll get kidney stones. And, of course, we're dealing with that in our article. Eight-part series on my website will explain that, how that battle just erupted here recently, and of course, how to sort this out so the public understands that they don't need to be afraid of vitamin C's, so they can really get a handle on this and begin to use it for their own health.
And really, it keeps people from getting infections. It really helps the arteries. It helps keep the cholesterol down. But, of course, many times it'll keep from getting blood clots, heart attacks. So many, many wonderful things. And the great tragedy is the doctor isn't going to read this in his medical journals. He doesn't have the time to go back and do the research that Bill Sarney does. Bill spends, I don't know how many hours a day, just researching the medical literature and brings us some wonderful stories of all of these things that we should know, that the doctors should know, but they don't. And so you're going to have to get educated and help us educate the medical profession. All right, Bill, pick the story up from there.
I'm sure many of us have heard the people taking long airplane flights may get blood clots in their legs. And I'm sure many of people have heard take an aspirin or make sure your blood is thin so you don't get blood clots on long airplane flights. What has that got to do with our story about vitamin C? Well, that's what's causing the problem. See, it's the lack of vitamin C. You can take all the blood thinners that you want, but the reason for the legs, it's where the circulation is the poorest, it's the furthest away from the heart, and of course the blood vessels are actually becoming so weak they're like a wet straw, they're just collapsing. And the thrust from the heart has to push it through. And, of course, we actually get sometimes some pains in our calves and so on, letting us know we're having these problems. And, of course, if the blood vessels begin to collapse, then you get a blood clot behind them. And the next thing you know, you've got a blood clot that could get free and get into the lungs or the brain, and that's what they're worried about. Well, these thrombotic clots, they call them, of course, it's simply caused by the lack of vitamin C. Now, I hope your listeners catch the point that instead of calling it a vitamin C deficiency, they prescribe drugs, these blood thinners, or the problematic aspirin. And aspirin may seem to be rather innocent, safe, over-the-counter medication, but they would never approve it if it was ever submitted to the FDA ever again. It causes bleeding gastric ulcers. It results in thousands of deaths every year. It simply doesn't work 40% of the time. It causes esophageal reflux, which is heartburn. It causes adult onset asthma, which cannot be reversed. It frequently causes a stricture, or that is a blockage of the esophagus going down your throat. It can be responsible for this, and so many other hemorrhages in the brain and elsewhere. So, this is what they're prescribing rather than vitamin C. And so if you're on long airplane flights, maybe a little extra vitamin C, and you should have been taking vitamin C all along. I'm sure many, many people have heard about shaken baby syndrome. Let's not shake those babies. In fact, there's a whole institute, the National Center for Shaken Baby Syndrome. Now we've got that, you see. And, of course, Americans are being advised, don't shake your babies, don't shake your babies, that's child abuse. There are 1,500 reports of shaken baby syndrome annually in the United States now. And how do they diagnose it? They look in the back of the eyes, and they see hemorrhages in the back of the eyes, and then sometimes they can examine further and find hemorrhages in the brain. And, of course, bruising and so on in the skin of the children, and then they accuse the parents, put them in jail, take the babies away. And now what are we finding out? What is shaken baby syndrome? A vitamin C deficiency. The vaccines that we flood our babies with just deplete the babies of more vitamin C. Mom was never coached to take more vitamin C in pregnancy, and now she needs to supply it for not only her but her growing baby. So it's not surprising that most babies are born deficient in vitamin C. In fact, a strong percentage have hemorrhages in the back of their eyes the moment they're born. Now, obviously, there hasn't been any child abuse, but here it is. It exists because it's a vitamin C deficiency. If you have babies, if you're a grandma or you're a grandpa and you have grandchildren, you can simply advise.
Hold that thought right there, Bill. We're going to have to bring our other stations on board here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Bill was simply talking about the shaken baby syndrome, and so many mothers, pregnant women are deficient in vitamin C. If they are, then their child is born deficient in vitamin C. And, of course, one of the ways you diagnose a shaky baby syndrome is looking for retinal hemorrhages. And, of course, if you look sometimes in the eye grounds of newborn children, you'll find retinal hemorrhages because, of course, they're vitamin C deficient. And if you have vitamin C deficiency, you have a tendency to bleed under the skin and the brain and the back of the eye. So this is certainly one of the contributing factors. And Bill was simply saying that when you flood the children with vaccines, and remember, they're giving these vaccines in the nursery. They're giving the child a hepatitis B vaccine. Of course, in the past, it had something like 85 times the normal accepted amount of mercury in those vaccines, but they tell us they've taken it out. They're not going to do that anymore, but they have all the other toxins in there and in the vaccine, and then, of course, this had an impact on the vitamin C level as well. So pick up the story there, Bill.
And, of course, you can see why they don't want the public to take vitamin C. Mothers during pregnancy absolutely need to take it. The high estrogen levels weaken the collagen bonds in the body so that the bones will spread, the skin will spread, so that we can get baby out for the moment of birth. But mommy, if she doesn't have enough vitamin C, there will be a rupture, and we can't keep the pregnancy. We've talked about this many times, how we don't take these nutrients because, well, there'd be more babies on this planet. And, of course, this is a sad day to see that women are told not to stay away from vitamin C when we have premature ruptures of the membranes and then, of course, a loss of a pregnancy and a precious life. And, of course, all of this because we're not getting enough vitamin C during pregnancy. Of course, the women are then left with scarring and stretch marks and all this and never knowing how to put their body back together again after pregnancy. When, again, it's vitamin C and they're breastfeeding their children, again, you need more vitamin C. And you see, the babies need about 20 milligrams of vitamin C per pound of body weight. So if you're giving formula to children, this is the amount that the animals make. And the animals make it throughout the day, so we need to take it throughout the day just the same way. This is what Dr. Linus Pauling was saying. So you break up the doses so you won't get a little diarrhea. And this is exactly what we've done with our little infant from the moment of conception all the way through to 14 months old. Now little Matthew has been receiving 20 milligrams per pound of body weight vitamin C. We put it in powder and put it in the formula. And we have liquid vitamin C. We can also add that to the formula. And, of course, he's strong as a rock with no rashes, no viruses, no infections, no colic. And, of course, gone through 14 months of life. So, you know, we're not really seeing what we can do. Dr. Fred Klenner called these super babies, babies that are given vitamin C from infancy on up. And I only wish I had Matthew, my little young son, to hand to you, because you think I'm handing you a sack of, something like styrofoam when I'm actually handing you a sack of rocks. This little boy is dense. He's very, very firm. And you can tell the difference. You can see when people, when I put him in the arms of people, they suddenly drop a little because they can't believe that he is as dense as he is. And, of course, you're going to be stronger because little children are making their bodies. They're building their collagen. Part of the collagen is the bones as well. And the cells that make the bones, the osteoblasts, will work much better. And, of course, we see this with our own child. So they recover better, they sleep better, they're better behaved, and, of course, they're healthier. That's the big thing. And for the most part, we're just taking it a day at a time, and we haven't really succumbed to any vaccines yet and probably don't intend to. Well, we're just taking it one day at a time, and we'll see. So I'm wondering if we really need all these vaccines, especially if our babies are not being exposed to the germs that we need to vaccinate them for. So they're not being exposed to hepatitis and whooping cough and all these things. The problem is that others may be and then come into your home, so we need to know a little bit about vaccines, and maybe there's a few that we need to do after time. But the whole point is, don't do it when they're small infants. Never do it when they're under 6 months of age. The inserts on the vaccine say not less than 6 months of age, And certainly let the baby's body get big enough before you start giving vaccines.
And yet, of course, they are giving them, usually in the nursery and then at 2, 4, 6 months, things of this sort. And of course, they're even trying to give the mercury-laden influenza vaccine to every six-month-old child in this country, knowing full well the disastrous effects on not only the mercury in that vaccine, but the aluminum, the other things that are in it. Why are they doing that? We're going to be back here in just a moment with Bill Sardi as we discuss, well, the health of our children and why are American children not as healthy as children from other countries. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening is Bill Sardi, who's a health journalist. And if you really analyze the health of the American children, the health of the American people, we're not as healthy as people in many other countries. Our children, well, one out of every six American children has a neurodevelopmental or behavioral abnormality. The incidence of autism is rising, of allergy, of autoimmune disease, of Alzheimer's disease, heart disease, diabetes. Why are all these things increasing in our society? Asthma dramatically increases. In fact, you take a child from another country and you bring them here, and they begin to develop all these immune diseases and autoimmune diseases and asthma and obesity. And children of mothers who've just come to this country born far healthier than the children born to native-born moms. Why is that? Well, I think there's something very definitely in our society that we're doing, and other things that are lacking in our society that are found in other communities. So pick up the story there, Bill.
Well, certainly I don't want to get off the subject of vitamin C, though. Vitamin C is the antidote, but so many times we're now blaming all of America for being overweight. By the way, it's your fault, you're being told. And, of course, you don't have lack of self-control. And, of course, you're never being told your food, most of it, the prepared foods, are laced with MSG, and MSG interferes with the brain signals of just telling you when your stomach is full so you'll stop eating. And the FDA has allowed food companies to put this into your foods and hide it under 40 different names. And then, of course, for one reason, food companies want you to eat more of their products. They put this in so you will eat that bag of Fritos, all the way to the bottom. You ever wonder, you weren't that interested when you started, but as you began to eat it, wow, it was so tasty you wanted to go all the way to the end. That's the way that they design these foods. And, of course, the MSG is laden in. Now, it has effects on us that are bad, and if we would take the vitamin C. And, in fact, researchers at Arizona State University just pointed out that vitamin C is actually a weight loss nutrient. If we got more vitamin C, you notice how lean the animals are? You don't see too many chubby animals, and they make their own vitamin C. Oh, there's that one exception. You know, those guinea pigs look a little chubby. Oh, well, they're one of the exceptions, of course. They don't make vitamin C, just like we don't, and look what happens to them. So, you know, I think there's something we can learn here. And, of course, as we get along and we see this terrible misinformation.
Hold that thought right there, Bill. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, I guess, this evening. Bill Sardi, and we're really talking about what's happening as far as vitamin C and the fact that the average doctor, the average individual, the average American doesn't realize that we need much, much more, because we do not manufacture this normally in our bodies as most other animals do. So pick up the story there, Bill.
Well, I think when we get to our audience here, our question is I know after all of this tonight, and they may want to examine all the references. We'll have that on my website in just a few days.
Why don't you just give the website out right now, and we'll give it out again. But how can they get to your website and get the information you've
come at? It's knowledgeofhealth.com. If you're not on the Internet, please just have a friend print it out for you so you can read it yourself. But
that's knowledgeofhealth.com.
Knowledgeofhealth.com. And, of course, you know, everything's free there. All the reports are free. There's no obligations. We'd like you to sign up for our regular newsletters if you get a chance. They're all free also. Your names aren't being given out to anybody. There's no intent there. But, you know, I think there's kind of a programming within people that I want to check out what you say with somebody else. That's okay. I think that's fair. The problem is it works to our fault. And, of course, I know so many people say, Bill, we listen to you, but why hasn't my doctor told me this? I don't know why he's as misled as all the rest of us have been. And, of course, it takes a lot of digging and research to sort all this out. We're trying to make it simple for you tonight. When I have no economic reason to tell you this, I have no bias. If medicines worked, we would use them. And, of course, we just use whatever we need. But all of humanity has been shortcut by something God seems to have designed and put in creation for all of us to make vitamin C. It was actually a hormone at one time. Humans lost the ability to do this along with fruit bats, guinea pigs, a few of the monkeys. And, of course, now they think they're going to be able to possibly reinsert the missing enzyme so that we can put back the ability to make vitamin C in humans. Now, you would think this would be a worldwide priority. What a tremendous breakthrough this would be. If humans made their own vitamin C, some researchers say they would live hundreds of years. We would grow taller. We would be bigger. We would heal from wounds faster. We would recover. We would have greater endurance, and we wouldn't get cataracts and so many of the other arthritis and diabetes and so many things. Because the animals take the blood sugar, and as it passes through the liver, converts it with enzymes to vitamin C. Now, we lost the enzymes. We lost one of the four enzymes needed to do this. Researchers think they're going to be able to put this gene back into humans. They did it already in fish, a little Japanese Madaka fish is what they call it, and they took fish eggs and put the gene back in, and its offspring made little fish that make their own vitamin C. And now they think they can do this if they can just find a way to get this gene back into the DNA in our cells, maybe in a human ovum, a woman's egg, possible, and they think they can use a virus, because viruses are very small, as what they call a vector to get it in there. That is some way to transfer it in, and they can take this little gene called guanylactone oxidase gene, that's the enzyme we're missing, and reimplant it in humanity. Now, you'd think that would be a top priority. There's only very few researchers doing this work, but they're actually making progress now. Just in the Journal of Genomics this year, maybe some possible inklings this would be. And, of course, you wonder if they're ever going to let this happen. If the public, by the way, this research should have been front page in every newspaper. It's been in the Genomics Journal. The public never hears about it because they don't want them clamoring for something. So, you see, it's possible that we would get man back to making vitamin C again. Now, we think the Bible tells us what would happen if man was making vitamin C? Because we think, if you go back to the Bible, patriarchs says that that Adam lived 900 years and Noah lived 950. I believe it was Methuselah lived 970 years or so. And of course, then there was the great flood, Noah's flood, and then thereafter, people began to live only 600 years and then 400. I believe Abraham was 175, Moses was 120, and David was about 70 years. This is the perfect description of a progressive gene mutation. They were losing that gene. Dr. Ginter, who we talked about earlier from Slovakia, actually found a few guinea pigs that still make their own vitamin C. Only a few, but he found some. So maybe there's even a few humans on the earth that still make a little of their vitamin C. Maybe that's why some people live 100 years, but certainly this is a perfect description in the Bible of when this all occurred. Now, for this to have occurred to all of humanity, a gene mutation affecting everyone on the planet, there had to have been a genetic bottleneck. That is, we mean only a few people surviving on the earth, and then the gene mutation affected all of them, and then all subsequent offspring in the human species. When was there a genetic bottleneck on the earth? Of course, the Bible explains that there were only 8 people at the time of the flood. And, of course, there was intermarrying there. There was a chance for a genetic mutation. That's a likely explanation of what happened. And, of course, we now see, but maybe God really did create us to live far longer. And of course, humans actually did on this earth, and then of course lost the ability to make the vitamin C, and their lifespan progressively declined to the point where it is today. So of course we could make great advancements, have higher fertility rates, lower birth deaths at birth, or mortality, and of course longer, happier lives if we just learned the lessons of vitamin C. A recent study showed that it pooled 9 different studies, took all the data and accumulated it up, and if Americans just consumed 700 milligrams of vitamin C a day, they would reduce the risk of coronary artery disease, the mortality from this, by 25%. Now, there is no drug that can do this. There is no drug even comparable to that. The latest studies show statin cholesterol drugs lower the mortality rate by less than 0.5%. We are just talking about 25%. So we could save millions of lives, and of course I've written to the National Institutes of Health about this. We've written to the New England Journal of Medicine, and in our 8-part report at our website, recently the New England Journal of Medicine published a report saying they had uncovered the very, very first step in artery disease, and they now know what causes it. And of course it's caused by a little enzyme, and it's involved with a little gene, and researchers from India uncovered this. This is the very first step of artery disease. And of course they reported from India that, well, statin drugs lower the risk of that first step, but so does vitamin C equally as well. And of course no one heard about this. All you heard about is the first part of the report, which talked about they've discovered the first step. But when the researchers in India, which is a different laboratory, then said that vitamin C could stop this, that went unreported. And then of course we wrote to the New England Journal of Medicine and told them that the levels of vitamin C needed to do this were just recently reported in the Journal of Agriculture and Food Chemistry, and it's possible for the vitamin C to lower the levels of the undesirable enzymes and proteins by 75%, and you could prevent artery disease from ever occurring in the first place. The New England Journal of Medicine editor wrote me back and said they didn't have room for my letter in their journal. Of course, they don't have time, they don't have room to talk about something that would save the lives of many millions of people. And so I certainly hope you understand the New England Journal of Medicine accepts advertising from the statin drug users as a publication. They are out of business if they don't continue to accept that advertising money. So this is the kind of problem we have. You're going to go to your doctor, he's going to look you square in the face, he's going to tell you he's read the medical literature, and there is no truth whatsoever to any claim that vitamin C is beneficial at all, because he's read all of the flawed science, just like all the rest of us have and been deceived over the years. And of course he's just a victim of this too. He doesn't understand it, and I don't know how a doctor could ever even give himself the chance to ever accept it, since he'd be putting himself out of business. So this is the problem, is to keep from the public anything they can get directly in their hand without having to go to the doctor. Any way of staying healthy at home, and of course it has to be a prescription item, and now you see what's happened. If you're continually in your mindset thinking, well, is this approved by the FDA? Well, Vioxx was approved by the FDA, and so was Bextra, and so was a lot of other drugs, and now we realize the FDA wasn't looking out for our welfare. They were actually just working for the drug companies. They wouldn't tackle this issue. And, of course, many thousands of lives were taken prematurely through these FDA-approved drugs, which, by the way, the FDA just didn't allow them to put them on the market. They allowed them to be advertised on television before we had follow-up safety studies, so that more people would be harmed. And, of course, billions of dollars were made. And if any of you read the story, the headlines today, Dr. Scott Gottlieb is the new number two director at the FDA. Who's Dr. Scott Gottlieb? They have a new director at the FDA. He was the number two man, so somebody else had to get in and fill that slot. Dr. Scott Gottlieb last week was at Wall Street Insider picking biotech stocks and telling investors which stocks to buy. And now he's the top guy at number two guy at the Food and Drug Administration. I wonder if he's going to still be giving out his hot stock tips. You see, it's a different mindset of person that you're supposed to be hiring at the FDA. Someone who's a guardian, who's looking out for your health. Instead, they take a man who is, his whole mindset is to make a pot full of money.
I think it's really so interesting, Bill, that ordinarily, you know, the people at the FDA are there for a long period of time and they're gradually promoted to a higher level. Dr. Gottlieb had not worked at the FDA, you know, before. He was suddenly just picked off of Wall Street and put into the number two position where he can speed these drugs right through all the FDA regulations and onto the market, whether they're harmful or not. But it'll sure be great for the profits. And I hate to sound callous and crass, but when you read the story of Vioxx and you realize that the government knew and Merck Company knew that with the initial study came out in 1999, the 090 study, that Vioxx increased the incidence of heart disease 700%, and they put it on the market anyway. I don't feel very good finding somebody from Wall Street now regulating the FDA. And what? With no background in the FDA, simply he's a political appointee. And who is he going to represent? Is he going to represent the people? Is he going to represent the special interests? And I think that everybody must understand that there are people in government who are not interested in public health that have another agenda.
Well, do you think his friends on Wall Street are still going to call his office and say, hey, Dr. Gottlieb, can you tell us which new drugs are going to get approved? I mean, you think that's going to stop? A half dozen former FDA officials said they do not know of anyone from Wall Street moving directly into such a high-level job at the agency. Ladies and gentlemen, you need to be spitting the pills out of your mouth. You need to be making a commitment to finding health without these problematic FDA-approved drugs. You need to find ways to control your blood pressure, cholesterol, diabetes, and so on, without these drugs that are so expensive and have so many side effects. My website has a lot of answers towards that. We have a whole report on blood pressure and other reports on cholesterol and so on to help you find your way with this. And, of course, most of those reports are without charge. And you'll find all this information authoritatively referenced. And of course, as I frequently say, we get lots of reports these days from people who've had success stories with all of this. And, of course, you know, they tell us that, well, here's a gentleman writing to us. And, of course, he's been using, of course, many of the things that we talk about. And, of course, heard you on the air. And, you know, this is where he first heard about all these things. And, of course, he's telling us that he went for bypass surgery and June of 2000, had a heart attack at age 71, which he is now. He was overweight. He's in a wheelchair, post-polio, very little exercise. But he started doing all the things we talk about, the vitamin C, the fish oil, the Longevinex red wine pill, and so on. And so the doctors put him through one of those heart stress tests, and they did the dye, the angiogram, to check out all of his arteries and a CAT scan. And he says the results is my heart shows no damage from the heart attack in the year 2000. No damage. It got erased. It went away. It disappeared. He said my heart was exceptionally strong. He said all my bypasses and arteries were cleared. CLEAR in caps. The lab blood work later revealed I'd have a slightly elevated C-reactive protein, and that's all. So, you see, the doctor wants him to go on a cholesterol-lowering drug. Of course, he doesn't really need to.
And if it's for the C-reactive protein for our listeners, just shows he has some inflammation in his body. But
right.
Sounds like he's really doing exceptionally well after, you know, a bypass procedure some years ago.
Well, when there should have been damage, and there was measurable heart damage, apparently it's disappeared. If you give your body the vitamin C and the other nutrients, you'll give it these tissues a chance to heal. And of course, that's why we do this show. We're trying to tell people, without anything, there's no commercial interest. We're not holding back anything. All we're trying to do is help and guide you in some way. And of course, this is one of your listeners in Mineral Wealth, Texas. So, and we hear these frequently, and of course, we just pray that more people will find their way to good health. You're never going to get well on most of these medicines because they deplete the body, human body, of essential nutrients. And, of course, the statin drugs deplete you of coenzyme Q10. Many of the blood pressure drugs lower your CoQ10 levels. Coenzyme Q10 is a nutrient to give strength to your heart, and so you need that. Of course, many other drugs.
We're going to have to go to a break here. I want you to get your website up one more time, twice more for us. Go ahead. What is the website where people can get these reports?
KnowledgeofHealth.com. KnowledgeofHealth.com.
All right, fine. And let me just suggest that you go there. Is there any sort of a telephone number you want to get out?
Not this evening.
All right, fine. We're going to be back in just a moment here with our special guest, Bill Sardi, right here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening has been Bill Sardi, who's a health journalist, and really a fascinating source of information, and I've found that through the years, Bill's information has been backed up by solid medical research, a lot of research that the average doctor is not going to have a time either to read or to research. So, Bill, we've got about 3 minutes for you to finish up the program. Bill, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, fine. We've got about 3 minutes to finish up the program.
Yes. I certainly hope the public does understand, is able to download this report, because they will see there has been a concerted effort to conceal, to hide, to shun, to certainly ignore the facts on vitamin C. And as we pointed out, Dr. Emil Ginter from the Slovakia, showing us that vitamin C was a cholesterol-lowering agent in the early 1970s and on through, showing us that you needed to take it through the day, just as we're learning now, and showing us it lowered triglycerides and did so many other wonderful things, and all of this never referenced by scientists at the National Institutes of Health, completely ignored, all being brought back out. We even have an exclusive interview with Dr. Ginter. So you'll be able to see it all for yourself and see that this information, which would have changed the course of mankind, we would be treating everybody with vitamin C, we would have greater success, lower health care costs, certainly far fewer side effects. And of course, we're just so frightened, we call it neutrophobia. We want to go to the doctor and ask them if any of these vitamins and minerals will interfere with our drugs, when it should be the other way around. The vitamins and minerals are essential, the drugs are not. So I pray that so many people will be able to find their way, get coached, and get away from these medicines and into the vitamins, minerals, and so on that will make them healthy.
Well, I certainly agree with you, and I really believe that there is so much that can be done short of the medicines that we're taking. Because if medicine were going to make us healthier, why, our country would not be having all the problems that it is today. And there's so much about health that you're not going to get through the regular medical channels. The obesity. The obesity epidemic the bill was speaking about, directly related to the MSG, and the aspartame or NutraSweet that they put on our products. You feed aspartame or MSG to an animal and they're going to get pathological obesity. But they never tell the American people. They blame it on the Colonel, they blame it on McDonald, but they never will tell you the real cause of that. They know why. Bill, thank you so very much for being with us this evening. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you, and good night.
Good night. Bye-bye. Well, that was, of course, Bill Sardi, and I hope you enjoyed our program with Bill this evening. A wonderful source of information right here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and this is the time when I need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. And if you're out there in the listening audience and you enjoy our program, we hope that many of you will decide that you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And if you'd like to get a free copy of our newsletter, why give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And I would simply suggest, if you really want to understand so much of what goes on, so much that's going on that doesn't make sense, that you would get my June newsletter. It's entitled The Occult Hierarchy, Part 2. Now, what is the occult hierarchy? Well, it is a group of people who are in contact with the other dimension. And, of course, it's described in the Holy Scriptures. It's described by people who have really had the ability to be mediums, to actually contact the other dimension. And we have some wonderful interviews with, let's say, Johanna Michelson, who was actually a medium and worked with a psychic healer for many years. And as she describes this other dimension that's there, and of course, there are people working at the upper echelons of government in touch with the other dimension. Let me suggest that you give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Ask for a copy of the newsletter, The Occult Hierarchy, Part 2. Why would anybody withhold information about pathological obesity and the relationship of MSG and aspartame from the American people and try to convince us it's just lack of exercise when children come from other countries, they're fine, they're healthy, and they're here for a period of time, and suddenly they have pathological obesity just like our children? Why? Because our children are drinking all these diet sodas that have NutraSweet in them, they're eating all sorts of food that have aspartame and MSG in them, and these lead directly to pathological obesity. And the fact that you've never heard that simply reflects the degree of control that exists today over what the American people think. I hope that many of you will go to our website, which is RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. And you can pull down our newsletters. And we want you to read those newsletters and study those newsletters and challenge the newsletters. And the information is there. The source of everything we say is there. And whether we're talking about issues of health or finance or of population control or of history, the documentation is there. Please check it out and determine whether or not we're telling you the truth. And if we are telling you the truth, then understand that behind everything that's going on today are powerful spiritual forces that are intent upon destroying this country. They have a different agenda. They have a different worldview. They want a one-world government. They want a new world religion. And they want the destruction of Christendom as we know it. You see, if you go into your Bible and read the Concordance, and you look at the word conspiracy, you will find there's a conspiracy against God. And that conspiracy is alive and well in America today. And you really can't understand so much of what's actually taking place unless you understand that this conspiracy is not imaginary. It's really very, very real. So we ask you to pray for America, to pray for revival, to pray for our leaders and ministers, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection until tomorrow at the same time. May the Lord be with you. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Now, our guest this evening is Arthur Bernclough, he heads a veterans group, Veterans for Constitutional Law, and represents the veterans who many, of course, are not well cared for at all by the government that promised to take care of them if they were injured or incapacitated while fighting for our country. Today, the veterans that are returning from overseas fighting in Iraq, within 3 months, about 30% of them now have what the government calls a mental problem, a mental illness. Well, this is exactly what they call the Gulf War veteran after the veterans who returned initially after the first Gulf War back in 1991. And now 30% of the returning veterans who are over in Iraq today, 30% of them when they come home, are having difficulty. Of course, they're closing down a Walter Reed Hospital, as you know. Many of these veterans are having very real problems getting health care. And when they go to the veterans hospital, the doctors have been told to tell them they're crazy. It's all in their head. It's all imaginary. It's post-traumatic stress syndrome. That's what they told the Gulf War veterans after the first war, Gulf War. Well, let me tell you that the symptoms are very real, and if you doubt that, we have a government report put out by the Veterans Administration in September of last year that points out that almost half of the people who came back, and they list about five or six groups, 62% of the British returning veterans, I think 65% of the veterans from an air group in New England, 35-37% from one group in Kansas, 45% from another group in Kansas. They had five different groups, and the average is 50% of these people are ill. This is from the first Gulf War. And yet the government kept saying there is no Gulf War illness, and the men and women who worked at the veterans' hospitals, who tried to treat the patients, who tried to diagnose the patients, who tried to find out what they really was wrong with them, they lost their jobs. Now, we have an obligation, as far as I'm concerned, to take care of our veterans. Everybody here has an obligation. Everybody who's listening to this program has an obligation to be concerned about the veterans. But unfortunately, there are people within the government who would agree with Henry Kissinger, who's reported in the book, These Final Days, Henry Kissinger, talking, you know, during the Nixon administration, saying soldiers, military people, are simply stupid, dumb animals to be used for foreign policy. Military men are simply stupid, dumb animals to use for foreign policy. That comes from page 194, 195 of The Final Days. You'll find the quotation there. But, of course, these are the men who've risked their lives for our country, and that's the attitude of the elite towards our veterans. Arthur, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Oh, it's good to get back with you, Dr. Stan. I haven't been on with you for a while, and there's been a lot of things happening.
Well, why don't you fill us in on what's really going on?
Okay. the government now, the Veterans Administration, is now going to be keying in on people with post-traumatic stress disorders, people who've already got disabilities given to them by the government.
All right, hold on. We'll be back here in just a moment with Arthur Bernclough as we begin to explore the mistreatment of our veterans. All right. right, our guest, Arthur Bernthal, and Arthur is saying that the government now is going to begin to zero in on the people with the post-traumatic stress disorder and, of course, the people who have the very real symptoms of Gulf War Syndrome, and
yes,
they are real symptoms, and these people are disabled by it. But many of them were literally forced to accept a diagnosis of a post-traumatic stress syndrome. They were told it was either that or nothing. Take it or leave it.
Exactly.
Go ahead. Pick up the story, Arthur.
Well, actually, there's been a significant rise in post-traumatic stress disorders in veterans during this Gulf War, while total veterans receiving disability payments grew 12.3%. The number of post-traumatic stress disorder cases increased nearly 80% between 1999 and 2004, and that's a tremendous amount. And it is now believed that 30% of the returning veterans from the Gulf are suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder.
Now you're speaking of the current returnees.
Right, the current returnees.
But are they really? Is this really post-traumatic stress disorder? Is this some other physical disability that they're calling post-traumatic stress disorder because they don't want the American people to know what they're doing to our men?
A lot of it is the physical disability. You're correct in that, Dr. Stan. A lot of it is. And what people don't realize, all the people in the Chicago area and readers of the Knight Ridder newspapers realize this, the VA, due to the massive corruption expose in Chicago for the last 7.5 months, they had that meeting, that final meeting with Mr. Nicholson.
Now, who is Mr. Nicholson?
The secretary of the VA, the new secretary of the VA, who replaced Mr. Principi under a lot of stress. He replaced Mr. Principi, and they finally had that meeting with about 300 veterans there, a town hall type meeting. They had the inspector general. They had Rear Admiral Cooper, who was Mr. Principi, the former secretary's head of his so-called task force. That's the same Principi. I keep pleading with him to quit the job he's got, that it's not a job for a man, it's a job for a sneaky little snit, which I've called him many, many times, and I've begged him to quit the job before he disgraces the uniform that he's worn half his life any further than he has. But, I'm only a commentator on the radio, he doesn't listen to me, he's got a well-paying job with the VA. But the VA got egg on their face at that meeting, and they had to give quite a few concessions to the veterans in Chicago because the Inspector General's report showed that Chicago was dead last in disability payments for the last 20 years in a row. And
well,
over
hold
the...
that thought right now. We're going...
Sure.
All right, well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening is Arthur Bernthal, and we're talking about the veteran situation. And, of course, the veterans have various districts, and one of the centers in Chicago. And there, for the last 20 years, the people who work for the VA have been withholding benefits from deserving veterans. And you must understand, in the listening audience, that the government has a program. And you reward the people who withhold the treatments and the benefits, disability benefits, from the veterans. So if you've got people that will turn down appeal after appeal or claim after claim after claim, they get paid for not doing their job, for not providing care for the veterans, for not providing compensation for the veterans. But of all the places in the country, why Chicago was the worst? So you pick up the story there.
It's called a bonus system. If you cheat a veteran of his benefits, you'll pick yourself up a bonus. The VA has been known for years and years as doing that. Now, what's even more shocking than the 20 years in a row that the Illinois veterans ended up in last place on disability received, for 70 years, Chicago, which is known as the stingiest VA office in the country, for the last 70 years, the Illinois veterans have either ended up last, second from the bottom, or third from the bottom. Now, this is for 70 years, seven decades, and the expose done by the Chicago Sun-Times and the Chicago Tribune and the Knight Ridder papers may have put an end to that, but the VA took it on the chin, and they had to give a lot of concessions there. And they're now looking to get even with veterans, and their way of getting even is they're going after 72,000 PTSD cases. It's actually, in reality, 79,000 cases.
Now, these are post-traumatic stress disorder cases, right?
Yeah. They're going after 79,000 of them, and they're also going after 68,000 total disability cases. In other words, a veteran who was 60 or 70% or 80% disabled with his injuries and could not work any longer, they went on something called total individual disability. And they pay you the same as somebody who has a total 100% disability, but they're 60, 70, or 80%, but they're unable to work for the rest of their lives. Now, many of these people have had that disability 10 years, 12 years, 14, 16, 18, almost 20 years. Many people have had the disability that long, but it doesn't matter. The VA is earmarking 68,000 cases indiscriminately, and they're going after them.
Well, they're going to reevaluate them to see whether or not they should have the disability or not.
Yeah, they're going to reevaluate them, but they've already contacted quite a few people, and without even a hearing or a physical examination, they have cut disabilities and discontinued disabilities. And we're advising the veterans not only to put in a claim with the VA, to put in an appeal with the VA, but we're advising these veterans who have been cut out without getting any kind of a hearing or a physical examination, we're advising them to take the case into federal court and take them in. It's a definite due process violation. Crowd up those courts, federal court, state court, civil court, crowd them up with cases of due process, and that'll impact the whole court system.
I think it's important for our listeners to know that the veterans system of providing disability for the men who risk their lives fighting for our country is riddled with corruption. And last time I heard, there were, I heard the figure 300,000 veterans still waiting to have their claims adjudicated or heard. Is that an exorbitant figure? Would you say
that's in that vicinity?
So
no, it's in that vicinity.
300,000 veterans, many of them, of course, are those that are coming back from the recent war. They're discharged from the military. They can't work. They go to the Veterans Administration. 300,000 cases. They just can't get around to do that. They just don't have the personnel. However, they have the personnel now to begin reevaluating the some 60, 70,000 people already on disability. So they can't get to the people who are trying to get disability and can't work.
Nope.
But they're going after those that have had the disability for some period of time.
Nope.
And they want, of course, to take that away from them. Why? Because our government is spending all sorts of money to Halliburton. Do you realize that there were $8 billion of money that disappeared over in Iraq when Paul Bremer was there? Remember Paul Bremer? He was the first man in charge. Paul Bremer worked for Henry Kissinger. He came from Kissinger Associates. He went in as the dictator of Iraq when the military, American military, took over. When he left, $8 billion had disappeared. And as he said, well, don't blame us. We didn't know what happened to it. Now we've given another $1 billion to the Iraqi military and the Iraqi police that we're trying to reestablish after we, of course, disbanded the old Iraqi army and the old Iraqi police force. So now we've invested $1 billion for supplies for the new police force and the new military, and it's all disappeared. They don't have any idea what's happened to it. There's no record of it. It's all been stolen. So the government has to come up with some means of raising funds. So they're going to take it away from our veterans. Pick up the story there, Arthur.
Well, actually, they're going to be evaluating between the PTSD cases and the total unemployability cases, 147,000 veterans. And keeping Chicago in mind, we even got a comment here from Randy Reese, who is the National Service Director for the Disabled American Veterans, and they usually back the VA 100% on this, but many of their members have called and they've complained to them, and the review would divert resources from the VA's backlog of several hundred thousand disability claims yet to be processed. That's over 300,000, and these people are just going to have to wait longer while they go after these 147,000 for evaluation, and that's the way the VA works. They work out of they're working out of revenge on Chicago, and I fear that the new I fear the new secretary of the VA is going to end up being even worse than the last one we just got rid of. And Mr. Principe now is raising all kinds of hell because his new job, he's in charge of closing the military bases around the country. And he's already tried to close Portsmouth up in New Hampshire, Portsmouth Naval Base, and he tried to close the submarine base in Groton, New London, Connecticut.
Well, does that have anything to do with the Veterans Administration? Is that, that's a separate issue?
No, he used to be the Secretary of the Veterans Administration.
Oh, I see. Okay, fine.
And now he's gone from one predator's job to another one, closing military bases. So they've got him there. The military is going to have to deal with Mr. Principe. We hope the veterans are through with this guy, but the military is going to have to deal with him because he's been appointed to be in charge of that.
All right, fine. Well, let's stick pretty well with what's happening to the Veterans Administration at the present time. So, now, what happened in Chicago? Did the attitude toward the veterans change after the hearings, after the change in administration in Washington, D.C., or are they still doing everything they can to prevent the veterans from receiving their disability payments that are needed and required and that are a result of their being disabled fighting for our country?
Well, they're still doing everything they can to prevent it, but they're doing it now a little bit more on the sly because they were very blatant about it before. Now they're a little bit more on the sly because they know they're being watched all over the country. They know all the Knight Ridder papers are publishing any of these horror stories that are coming out of Chicago and other places. I mean, it's not only there. In California, your San Luis Obispo paper is publishing this, your Detroit Free Press, your Akron Beacon.
Now, are these all Knight Ridder papers?
Yep.
The Knight Ridder newspaper syndicate has actually then been on top of this. I certainly haven't read any of this in the New York Times, which I read.
Nope,
the Washington
I didn't either.
Post and the Wall Street Journal. But at least there is one newspaper chain that is getting the truth out. Unfortunately, most Americans don't read a Knight Ridder paper,
nope.
And as a result, they don't realize the gross mistreatment of our veterans. And it was President Reagan who said, any nation that will betray its fighting men will one day betray its citizens.
That's correct.
And I believe that with all my heart. Yep. If a nation that will betray its fighting men, who've risked their lives and many times been crippled fighting for their country, a nation that will betray its fighting men will betray its citizens.
Well, they've been going at them hot and heavy. The Chicago Sun-Times have been going with at them hot and heavy, and the Chicago Tribune have been going at them. But I don't see a word out of any of the Los Angeles newspapers. I don't see a word out of any of the New York newspapers, except the Wall Street Journal. And I don't see a word out of any of the San Francisco newspapers. So the VA's press corps apparently is doing their job in those three towns.
Now, of course, the VA press corps, really, their job is to conceal the truth, isn't it,
exactly.
From the American people, and to put out sort of propaganda cover stories so the American people won't really know what's going on?
Exactly. Now, they've got 2,220 people working for this VA press corps receiving salaries of somewhere between $65,000 and $85,000 a year, and their sole job is to keep any news, negative news about the VA, out of the media, and they keep them hidden under unrelated job titles. But everybody knows about the VA press corps. It's incredible. When they sent those 12 people in Atlanta, they had 12 rating board members, and they put them in jail for 3 to 6 years for robbing something like $11.2 million from the families of dead veterans. Only two newspapers in the whole country covered it, Atlanta Constitution and Chattanooga Times. They shut down all the rest of the newspapers from covering it. Now, if the VA can afford to have 2,220 people working for them, getting between $65,000 and $85,000 a year, if they could afford to have 1,200 lawyers working for them and afford a bonus system to pay rating board members money to deny claims, I'm sure they can afford to pay veterans the money they owe them for their injuries.
No, we're going to be back here in just a moment at Radio Liberty, and we're going to be talking about what's happening to our veterans. And just remember, a nation that will betray its fighting men will eventually betray its citizens. Well, Dr. Stan, back here at Radio Liberty, our guest this evening is Arthur Bernclough, and we're talking about the propaganda that's used here in this country. And certainly we've seen this with the military recently. The fact that Paul Tillman, he was he's a football player,
oh,
he
gave
up a $3 million contract to join the military.
Arizona because, Cardinals.
Right, and he wanted, of course, to have an opportunity to serve his country. He went off to Afghanistan, and he was killed by his own men, an accident of friendly fire. But the government lied about that. They knew he'd been killed by friendly fire. They didn't want the American people to know that, so they concocted this story about him fighting bravely, and they even gave him a Silver Star. It was all a lie. And they would lie to the American people about the fact that Paul Tillman was killed just as an accident. Jessica Lynch, you've heard the stories of Jessica Lynch, the courageous woman fighting there, firing a rifle, killing the Iraqis until she ran out of ammunition, and then taken to Iraqi hospital, and then, of course, whisked away in the middle of the night by the special forces. It was all a lie. The story was a total lie, and of course the Iraqis had contacted the Americans to come and get her, but we had to have a story for the American people. And when you have a government that concocts stories and lies consistently to the American people, what can you believe? We need a government that serves us, not a government that deceives us. So with that as the background, Arthur, why don't you pick up the story?
Well, we haven't got that kind of a government now. And a lot of people say, well, elected Democrats, that'll be the answer. That's not the answer either. We've had Democrats in there, and they've done nothing also. Part of what happened in Chicago, there was one particular veteran, which I believe I discussed on our last program for a short while, a World War II veteran by the name of Arco Ciancanelli, who had... he was the holder of the Distinguished Service Cross, the second highest decoration you can get in the military. He's a holder of a Bronze Star, Silver Star, and Purple Heart, and was wounded about 7 or 8 times over there and suffered severe frostbite. Now, this particular veteran was a genuine war hero and had never received any disability out of the VA at all. And he had put in multiple times to receive his disability, and he was discharged from the service back in 1945. 52 years later, in 1997, they awarded him a disability of about $700 a month and gave him only 2 months of retroactive money. And he kept filing claims to get paid, and finally, last February... his picture was on the front page of the Chicago Sun-Times with his story. He could only walk like less than a block, and he was like almost totally crippled, and the man had not been paid anything more than that $700 a month since 1997, and nothing before that. When he published that story, 8 days later, he received a check for $18,144 from the VA because they had egg all over their face. And they were very embarrassed, and they sent him a check. And that's only for one of his injuries, and he had 6 or 7 more injuries that he had, and he said he's applying for all the rest of them. And he did. He filed all the papers, he applied for everything, and then on May 28th, the gentleman died.
Hold that thought right there for a moment, and we'll be back in just a moment and tell you the rest of the story. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Arthur Bernclough of Veterans for Constitutional Law, and he was telling the story of this veteran. Was that the Korean War or the Second World War?
He was in the Second World War.
He was in the Second World War, and he was severely disabled there, frostbite, and he'd been trying from the end of the Second World War repeatedly through the years to actually get the disability that was entitled. He didn't actually get any recognition until 1997, so you're talking 1945.
52 years.
52 years. He kept applying, he kept going through the system, but you see, the system is designed not to reward the veterans, but to deprive the veterans of the disability benefits that they are entitled to. And for 52 years, he kept filing claims. Eventually, he did get, $700 a month. Now, here was a person who could only walk a block or so. He'd been incapacitated all this time.
Very bad
shape. Eventually, then, very recently, the story came out in one of the major newspapers, and immediately the Veterans Administration sent him a check for $18,000. But he was applying for the rest of his disability that he should have had, and of course then he died. You want to tell the story from there?
Well, he died on May 28th, and I try to see that the family got paid for this. I contacted the two senators involved. I made 21 separate calls to Senator Obama and Senator Durbin. To try to see that his family got the money, to maybe twist their arm a little bit to see that the family got the money, because when I called up the Veterans Administration, Mr. Nicholson's office, I got the man who was in charge there, Mr. Hearn, and Mr. Hearn said to me, we don't intend to pay the families of Arco Ciancanelli or James Gates, another veteran who died that they did him in his benefits. They said, we don't intend to pay the families one button.
Now, of course, so what are the regulations? Are the families entitled to payment after the veteran has died?
Absolutely. There was a Supreme Court case, Brown versus Gardner, and a Supreme Court case ruled that the law supersedes any VA regulation, that it supersedes the VA regulation. It makes it clear that that a veteran's pending disability claim it terminates upon the veteran's death. However, survivor of the veteran, such as the surviving spouse, child, or parent, may file a so-called accrued benefits claim. In this decision, they previously limited that to 2 years, but they just recently changed that, and you are no longer limited to 2 years of payment. They had figured out a way that once a veteran won his case, okay, we'll pay him for 2 years, then we'll cut it off. The Supreme Court ruled they can't do that. So they have to pay the veteran's family. But what they're not doing is they're not paying attention to the law. They're letting Veterans Administration regulations supersede the law, and the Supreme Court says you can't do that. There was a Supreme Court case. And, I contacted... I made 21 different calls, 10 to Durbin's office. He has two offices, one in Chicago and one in Washington, and 11 of them to Obama's office, and didn't do any good because the senators have bulged out. They're running the other way. They don't want to get involved. And I had a list of over 300 veterans who attended that meeting, and I've reached over 200 of them. I've gotten their telephone numbers, and I've gone on a one-man campaign to write letters to the Senate demanding the recall of both senators to the Senate for bilging out on their promises. Now, I don't know how many of them are going to write letters, but I hope quite a few of them that I got to will write those letters into the Senate asking for the recall, because both senators promised to see this thing through all the way, and they have bilged out.
Well, I think that, a senator's promise and $5 to buy a cup of coffee anyplace.
Yes, sir.
Politicians say what people want to hear, but most senators are not willing to take on the Veterans Administration or the massive bureaucracy in Washington, D.C. They're not there to represent the people. They're there to keep the people happy,
Feeling
that they have representatives in Washington, D.C., but they do not represent the people. They represent the special interests in Washington, D.C., as we saw recently with the CAFTA vote.
Exactly.
30-1 against CAFTA, and it still passed. And the administration put out $50 billion of your tax money for special favors for those congressmen's votes that they needed. And they still only won by two votes, probably even fraudulent. But the important thing is they violated every rule of the House of Representatives. They wanted to get this legislation through, and it's going to cost you $50 billion. And it's not what the people want, it's what the ruling elite want. And
exactly. If
they understand that, nothing's going to change. We're going to be back in just a moment here with Arthur Byrne Clow of Veterans for the Constitutional Law, right here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening, Arthur Birnbaum, and we're talking about the plight of the veterans who, you know, is a victim of the Veterans Administration. We talk about bureaucracy, but this is an incredible bureaucracy. The veteran files a claim. He has to get into one of their administrative courts, and the way these courts are set up is we win, you lose.
Oh,
and the veterans goes back year after year after year, and he's not allowed to take this into a regular court until he's exhausted all the various rules and regulations and hearings, and it is designed to wear down the veteran so he won't be given any disability payments. And so you've been involved in this for many years, Arthur.
Oh,
I know
many,
how frustrating
many
it
years.
May be. So pick up the story that you've actually tried to call the United States senators. They're not really interested in doing anything as far as the plight of these veterans. So go ahead from there.
Well, I've made one call after another, and only one time out of the 21 was my call answered. And the party promised to do something about it and never did. And I sent a book. I guess you remember the plot to seize the White House.
Yes,
I sent one of those books to the aide for Senator Obama. I sent him one for giving me the minutes of the hearing. Now, he went out of his way to get me the minutes of the hearing.
Now, this was the hearing that was held in Chicago where the senator and the veterans met to talk about how they were simply being given the runaround.
Right, on May 19th. And I sent him that book because he got me the names of all the veterans there, the numbers I had to find out myself, the telephone numbers, and I sent him this book, and I got a letter back from him. Thank you for your recent correspondence, Mr. Birnbaum. Thank you for your recent correspondence. I'm very grateful for constituents who take the time to carefully discuss as well as inform our office of their concerns. The copy of the book you mailed, now listen to this, will remain on file, serving as a reference and representation to the American public. Once again, thank you for your correspondence, sincerely. And I read the letter carefully. I read it over a few times. And then I started steaming to myself, saying, Birnbaum, you haven't got any guts. Let them know where you stand and show them where you live. So I sent a letter out to this aide, to Senator Obama. It was addressed to the both of them, to their both attentions. Thank you for your correspondence of August 10, 2005. My intention in sending you this rare book, The Plot to Seize the White House by Jules Archer, was as a personal gift for you and you alone for your cooperation.
Hold that off right there.
Sure.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and I guess this evening is Arthur Birnbaum. We're certainly talking about the plight of many of the veterans here in this country who, you know, have fought for this country, risked their lives for the country, and they come back, and then, of course, they are difficulty getting any treatment. They're told that they're crazy. They have all these symptoms. They're disabled. They're given Valium or one of the other sedatives, and then, of course, they can't work. They can't get medical care. And then they try to get their disability payments, and those disability payments, simply have to get into this whole bureaucratic system that is basically designed to frustrate them and prevent them from getting the money. So that, pick up the story from there.
Yeah, we call that system the rat wheel. They keep you running on the rat wheel forever.
Okay.
I said, The Plot to Seize the White House by Jules Archer was sent to you as a personal gift, and for your cooperation in sending me the minutes of the town hall meeting, and for no other purpose. I didn't send this to you to be put on file in a politician's office, but to be read by you. If I had any idea at all that you would do this, you would have never received the book from me. I could have very well donated this rare book to my own public library, where it would be read and revered by the public. Now, more than three decades ago, this book was seized from the shelves of every bookstore, the schools, and the libraries by big business interests and the strong-arm tactics of the American Legion, and it is very apparent to me that you've never read the contents nor grasped the significance of the history associated with it, and it's because of callous attitudes like yours that I very rarely get involved with politicians, nor do I play the congressional game. The VA has no intention of ever paying the families of Arco Ciancanellian or James Gates. A little congressional pressure from your office or the other senator could have forced their hand in reopening up both cases, And C.M. Canelli was a genuine war hero and the holder of the Distinguished Service Cross, Silver Star, Bronze Star, and the Purple Heart. And yet he was treated this way by the VA. Shame on them and anyone who did not go out of their way to rectify this outrage. David, please return this book to me so I can put this to good use where it'll be appreciated. Thank you, yours very truly. I probably won't get the book back, but I feel a lot better for writing that letter to him and to Senator Obama.
Okay, now, is there anything else that that we can let our listeners know about the totally, you know, callous attitude of what's really going on?
Yeah, I wanted to talk about some of the wounded that are coming back, and also the attitude of this court. One gentleman, Philip Cushman, the president of Veterans Due Process, another veterans organization, has been suing the Veterans Administration in federal court, and he has got all the proof, he's got everything documented, that they falsified his records, and everything was presented in court. And yet, the court that they made him go to after the Veterans Court was the Federal Circuit Court of Appeals in Washington, which in reality was a patent court for people who invented things. It was a patent court, and the judges there know nothing about veterans law. And what they do is now, when they send a case out of the Court of Veterans Appeals, it goes to that court if you got to appeal, and that court actually rubber stamps their decision. They never go against the VA.
Well, of course, can you get a jury trial?
It's difficult. It has happened, and every time there's been a jury trial, the veteran has won.
Well, of course, the thing is that certainly our veterans should be entitled to jury trial.
Yes.
But the idea of administrative justice, then, of course, you have a political appointee who's going to be making the decision. Well, you know, our system of justice was based upon trial by jury, not trial by government-appointed judge who's there for life as long as he goes along with the system. We have some good judges, we have some bad judges. All judges should be impartial, and tragically they're not.
This is true, and what I'm advising every veteran who gets his case into court, I'm advising, like, all these people who are being cut out on their disabilities without a physical or without a reevaluation, or they just send them a letter and cut them out. I'm advising to go to court and take them in on due process violations. It's a definite charge that you can you're entitled to a trial on that. And that will impact the entire system. And another thing I'm advising them too is if they go into a court, especially a federal court, and the judge is assigned to their case, and that judge had any time in their career worked for the Justice Department, I'm advising them to demand the recusal of that judge. You don't want somebody who worked for the Justice Department sitting on your case, because they're going to show deference to the federal government each and every time they rule on a case.
I certainly agree with you, and I think that it's, you have to have an impartial judge, not one, of course, who's part of the system. Do you have any thoughts on the closing of the Walter Reed Hospital? Will that have any impact at all upon the veterans? What are they doing with the veterans' hospitals? On my understanding, many of these are closing as well.
What I'm concerned about now are these people coming back from the war, and they're putting broken bodies and broken minds together at Walter Reed. They're doing wonderful work there, and I hope they do not close it until they put up a facility that will take the caseloads coming in, because the caseloads coming into that hospital, the hospital is now overcrowded. The caseloads coming up are unbelievable. And if they close this prior to putting up a facility that's going to accommodate these cases, it's going to be an absolute disaster, Dr. Stan.
Well, I'm very, very concerned. Walter Reed has been, you know, sort of the pristine jewel of the
yes.
The military medicine, and the finest doctors went there. If a physician was assigned to Walter Reed, that was really a tribute to his ability. They had always the best quality medicine there. And, of course, some of the congressmen can go there. Congress,
sure.
People working for government can go there. You and I couldn't go there. But then we have a system of special care for the elite. They can go to Bethesda. They can go to Walter Reed. But, of course, you know, the fact that they're going to close this down and cut off care, for certainly the returning servicemen. Now, that really wouldn't include the veterans. Veterans go to a separate hospital once they're out of the military, don't they?
Usually, yes. I'd say in most cases. In most cases. Now, I went to Walter Reed Hospital when I was in. And I met Richard Nixon.
Military? Were you retired at the time?
No, I was in the military.
All right, right.
And I met Richard Nixon there, who happened to be in the hospital there for a while. So you do get presidents, you get very high-ranking people in government there. They not only take care of the people in the service, but they take care of people in the government, they take care of Congress. And the facilities there are wonderful. It's a great, great hospital. And why they're talking about closing it, I know the building is old, maybe they want to put a new building up, but they can't close this before they can do something to accommodate the people who are there and the people who are coming in from the war, because I got this report back in here from, hold on one second, General Kiley. He says only 4-5% of the people coming back from Iraq have PTSD, but the figures that I'm getting from just about everybody else there, it's way more than 4-5%. It's closer to 30% coming in from there. And General Kiley is throwing some very false figures out there.
Well, of course, we have reports that about 30% of the men, after about 3 months, will be coming down with what they call a disability, and they call it a mental disability because they do not want to recognize that this is a physical disability, and I have my own reasons as to my own belief as to why this is happening. But with the 30%, and this is within 3 months, what's going to happen to these people 3, 4, 5, 10 years down the line? We're finding more and more of the veterans of the first Gulf War are getting sick with the passage of time.
Yeah.
What did they do to the veterans of the first Gulf War? What are they doing to our men today? If you have a question or comment for our guest this evening, Arthur Bernthal, give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you're a veteran who's having difficulty getting your claim through, why, of course, you'll want, of course, to get in touch with Arthur and his organization because they'll help you. Arthur, let's get out your telephone number.
Okay.
Let's get out your website.
The best place to reach me is a telephone number is 631-474-4261. And my organization is Veterans for Constitutional Law, and I'm Arthur Bernthal, I'm Executive Director. And we're located at 112 Jefferson Avenue in Port Jefferson, New York. The zip code is 11777. Don't have my own website. I'm on the Firebase Veterans Network. I'm also on a gentleman who's been on your program, Dave Tereshini. He put me on his website already. And I got this article. I got this article that came in from Associated Press. John J. Lumpkin. I don't know if the name is familiar to you.
You go right ahead and tell me.
It's Iraq Affecting Mental Health of Troops. Washington, a survey of troops returning from the Iraq War, found 30% had developed mental health problems 3 to 4 months after coming home.
That would be the article I was referring to. Yes.
Ah, okay. The Army Surgeon General said Thursday that was an advertisement there. The problems include anxiety, depression, nightmares, anger, and an inability to concentrate, according to Lieutenant General Kevin Kiley and other military medical officials. A smaller group, usually with more severe cases of these symptoms, is diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder or PTSD. I just want to show you what they're doing here with this fooling around with figures. The 30% figure is in contrast to the 3-5% diagnosed with a significant mental health issue immediately after they leave the theater. According to Colonel Elspeth Ritchie, a military psychiatrist on Kiley's staff, a study of troops who were still in the combat zone in 2004 found 13% experienced significant mental health problems. Soldiers departing a war zone are typically given a health evaluation as they leave combat, but the Army is only now instituting a program for follow-up screenings 3 to 6 months later, said Carley, speaking to reporters. A pilot program for the follow-up screenings conducted on 1,000 U.S. soldiers returning from Iraq to Italy last year found a much greater incidence of mental health problems than expected, a fact Carley attributed to post-traumatic stress problems taking time to develop once a danger has passed. Only about 4 or 5% of troops coming home from combat actually have PTSD. This is what Carley says, but they face many other problems adjusting. Now, the stress of combat, seeing dead and mutilated bodies and feeling helpless to stop a violent situation, are common triggers. We call them stressors. In Iraq, truck drivers and convoy guards are developing mental health problems in greater numbers than other troops, Ritchie said, suggesting the long hours on the road, constantly under threat of attack and taking their toll. In Iraq, the military has about 200, only 200 mental health experts grouped in what the Army calls combat stress control teams. Now, these teams are at many posts around the country and talk with troops after battles to try to prevent suicides and diagnose troops who should be evacuated from the country because of mental health problems. And the general said they are worth their weight in gold. Now, we have, they've applied to the Department of Defense for mental health counselors to work in the Veterans Hospital for returning Iraqi and Afghani veterans of the war there. They've applied for them, and the Department of Defense and the VA has not earmarked the money yet. So far, they have not put 1 cent toward getting these counselors to see these people once they get here. So that's a big gaping hole in the Veterans Administration system. They don't have these counselors, and they have not approved the money. But they sure approved $30 million to go to rebuilding an air-conditioned prison in Guantanamo that Halliburton got the contract for. They approved that thing pretty fast. But they Congress has not approved this. The Department of Defense has not approved it. It hasn't even gone up before Congress yet. And we don't know what's going to happen with this, but we know they do need those counselors desperately there.
Well, I think that we have an obligation to see that our veterans are cared for. And, of course, the great tragedy is the congressmen and the people in the Bush administration who speak so glowingly of our fighting men when they send them over tend to totally ignore them when they return home. And this is really what's so unconscionable. And the plight of our returning servicemen from this war, from the previous war, and for all the other wars we have, and now they're beginning to close down the veterans' hospitals. And, you know, as they do that, it makes it more and more difficult for them to get health care. Do we have any idea how many of the VA hospitals they've actually closed down?
Not that many yet, but they're expecting to close quite a few down. They're expecting to close somewhere around 8 to 10% of them down.
About 8 to 10%. How about how many VA hospitals do we have around the country? Do you have any idea? Well, at least I know, having talked to people who worked in the Veterans Administration.
Around 70-something.
About 70. I've talked to several people who worked in the VA hospitals, and they told me that they were ordered not to treat Gulf War syndrome,
yes,
not to try to find out why the veterans of the first Gulf War were ill. And there was a Dr. Boomslager, I think it was his name, down at the Long Beach Veterans Hospital, who was doing MRIs on the veterans and finding that they had actually lesions in their central nervous,
yes,
system, which is why,
oh, yes,
they couldn't think, why they had the neurological symptoms. And he was fired. Why? Because he was trying to find out what was wrong with them, and there were those within government that did not want that done. That, of course, really is rather frightening, because it was almost as if they knew there was something seriously neurologically wrong with many of these veterans, and they didn't want the doctors to know, and certainly didn't want the patients to know. Now, we know that the incidence of anterior lateral sclerosis or Lou Gehrig's disease is so much higher in the veterans of the first Gulf War.
Incredibly higher.
But they can't let the American people know what they did to them.
Well, these doctors are under orders there to play down anything like this. You know, a lot of them have been threatened that they're going to lose their jobs, and they're telling them to play this down, not to you know, not to come out with the total truth on there. So most of these, we'll say, are errors of omission rather than commission.
Well, I think it's a tragic situation. And whether it was experiments that they used, whether it was the vaccines, or whether it was the depleted uranium, and there are many, many explanations, and probably it's all of the above and
yep.
other things as well. But we're talking of half of the veterans of the first Gulf War have a serious disability. If any of you out there doubt what I'm saying, why, you can call us at 1-800-544-8927. We'll send you the pages out of the Veterans Committee report. They did have a very excellent investigation last year that was published in September 2004. Everything was done to conceal it. We finally got it off the internet, and this group of physicians analyzed what had happened to these young men and agreed the Gulf War illness is a real entity, despite the fact that everybody in the bureaucracy tells you it isn't. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up the program this evening with our special guest, Arthur Burnclow. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Arthur, why don't you get your telephone number out there just one more time, and then you have 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Okay. I'm with Veterans for Constitutional Law Limited, and we're a veterans advocacy group. We try to help veterans with their claims. We try to help them achieve some sort of legal parity with the rest of the country. And the best way to reach me is either write me at Veterans for Constitutional Law Limited, at 112, number 112 Jefferson Avenue in Port Jefferson, New York. That's 112 Jefferson Avenue in Port Jefferson, New York, and our zip code is 11777. Or for those who want to call me, my telephone number is 631-474-4261. 631-474-4261. I'm readily available. I'm probably one of the most accessible people that you can reach, and any telephone call or letter, I will respond to. There's nobody that's going to be forgotten or not responded to.
All right, fine. And of course, you will help the people when they get into this maze of the bureaucracy, won't you? And advise
you
them
bet.
As to how to handle it, because the average individual has no idea. They don't understand the rules and regulations are designed for one purpose, and that is to confuse you, to make you feel defensive. And then you go for a hearing, you get turned down. You go for another hearing, you get turned down. You go for another hearing, you get turned down. That's the way the game is played. And until people understand that, and that you, if you play the game by their rules, they win, you lose. So,
and this is the reason.
Can certainly guide you through that.
Well, this is the reason, Dr. Stan, that I'm encouraging more and more people to take their case into real courts. If they can't get a lawyer, go in pro se. But eventually, if you've got a good case, with the hundreds of thousands of lawyers in this country, you'll attract a good lawyer to your case. And I'm advising them to take it into a real court. You can keep applying and applying and getting turned down. There's no law that says you can't go into a real court at the same time you're applying for a veteran's disability, but the key to it is don't go into a real court and apply for your disability. What they will do is they will take your case in the court. If you have a hearing, they'll take it, they'll remand it back to the Veterans Court, and you're running on the rat wheel again. Take them in on due process, on constitutional violations, if you can, on racketeering influence corruption organization, on malpractice. They're very sensitive to malpractice. And get them into a court one way or another. Once you get them into a real court, you stand the chance of winning, especially if you get a jury trial.
Okay, hold that thought for just a moment, and then we'll bring our stations back. We'll get your telephone number up one more time.
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest has been Arthur Burnclow. Arthur, one more time, get your telephone number up.
Okay, best number to reach me, 631-474-4261. And
all right, fine.
Your calls will be returned to me. Bye-bye.
All right, fine. Thanks very much for being with us.
And thank you again, Dr. Stan, for giving me this opportunity.
Bye-bye. Okay, that was Arthur Burnclow from Veterans for Constitutional Law. And I think that there are so many various aspects of this. First is the mistreatment of our veterans, the attitude of the elite, like Henry Kissinger, who's referred to our fighting men as stupid dumb animals. The quotation comes from the book The Final Days, and I think it's 194 and 195. Kissinger is quoted by Woodward and Bernstein, who wrote the book, as saying our fighting men are stupid dumb animals. That's the way the elite feels about them. They're quite willing to send them over to fight and die, but when they come back, they're not going to take care of them. There's so much information you need to know about the Gulf War and about what's really going on, and I hope many of you will go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com, and we have so much information there on the Gulf War illness, on the anthrax vaccine that was given to our fighting men, to the vaccine A, which was the experimental vaccine that had a squalene in it that was given to our veterans. And, of course, the officials have consistently denied that any vaccine with squalene was used. But then, of course, remember what they said about Jessica Lynch? You remember what they said about Paul Tillman? And, of course, government officials lie. You listen to the president's press secretary. He lies. He changes his subject, his tune all the time. But, of course, that's what they're paid for. And if they tell the truth, they're out of a job. This is what happens when a nation turns its back against God. We have an awful lot of good people in government, but they're afraid to speak out because if they do, their job will be lost. They will be marginalized and demonized. And what we need is the good people out here to really care. So please go to our website at www.radioliberty.com. You can pull our programs down. You can listen to them 5 hours a day live, either directly at that website or linking to the other websites where we're heard. You can listen to our archive programs. Please pull down our newsletters and read them, especially the newsletters about the occult hierarchy, part one and part two. Or the latest newsletter, Wars and Rumors of Wars. Why are we really in Iraq? What is the war really about? Are we being told the truth, or is there an agenda that the average American really doesn't understand? So if you'd like to get a free copy of one of our newsletters, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. We'll send you free of charge perhaps the Occult Hierarchy Part 2, because it leads you into the spiritual forces that work within our society today. And ladies and gentlemen, there are spiritual forces. There is a spiritual dimension to everything that's going on today. And as you begin reading the material available on this website, you'll find information you will never see elsewhere. You can't understand anything going on today because as much what's going on really doesn't make sense. But once you understand, we're involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political and ideological and cultural battlefield, then everything makes sense. Please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for Radio Liberty.